Look at that! Level 10 already! Jeb said between grunts as he jabbed the finisher down into the pit, stabbing the writhing boars about the neck and face as best he could. It was tough work, but it was netting him levels at a tremendous pace by weaponizing the safe zone. Even after the Kreskers had filled up the pits, they were unable to push through the invisible barrier just on the other side, squealing like mad and pushing mindlessly forward in a berserker rage.
You're out of breath and sweating like a pig, Jessica noted.
Well, excuse me for having a normal body, Jeb said, leaning on his spear and plunking the 4 points straight into Mist. He was starting to be able to read the mood of the weather itself, which was cool. He was happy now, but it was going to rain sometime in the evening. Jebediah Trapper, unclassed, level 10. Body 5, Mist 25, Nerve 8. The amount of discomfort seemed to be relative. Going from 0 to 15 had knocked him out. 15 to 21 was a major headache, while 21 to 25 was just uncomfortable. The star burning inside him had grown larger as he had focused on breathing mist in and burning it, circling the star's corona of gas back into the ball of energy instead of siphoning it, growing its size as quickly as possible.
You're going to need to get physically stronger, too. What's the point if you get tired before you finish all of them off?
Jess said. In response, Jeb siphoned out a bit of energy and infused the spear with it, similar to the way he moved dirt. He'd realized that telekinesis was more effective on a given object if the mist was penetrating through it, rather than wrapped around it like a human hand. Jeb let go of the spear, directing it to continue stabbing Kreskers. Look, Ma, no hands! Jess watched the spear finish off a few squealers by itself, her eyebrows raised, objectively impressed, but then her brows lowered, and she looked back at Jeb.
But can you outrun them?
I could probably ride the spear like a broom, Jeb said, holding on to the spear and lifting himself off the ground. Physics be damned. It wasn't the fastest mode of transport. Lifting Jeb's 170 pounds off the ground was a strain, and he lost a lot of speed as a result. They both knew that it wasn't a viable mode of transport. Yet.
If you're going to keep dumping everything into mist, you're going to need accolades and rewards.
What?
Didn't you hear the announcement when we started? Higher difficulty, higher rewards. George killed a mini-boss in the Northwoods, and he got a fruit that gave him a permanent plus 10 to his nerve.
That's like 10 levels.
Exactly. You're way too physically weak to survive even a few seconds without your magic. The raptors to the west took people's heads off without them even noticing. If you're going to survive for any length of time, I'll have to...
Jess sighed and put a hand over her face. Power level me?
Yeah, basically.
Acorn! Jeb shouted, making Jess jump in place before scowling at him.
You wish to barter, Eminem Lord?
Acorn said, flitting up to him. Yeah, why didn't anyone tell me about accolades and rewards and such and stuff?
You didn't ask, Eminem Lord.
Who are you talking to? What are you talking to?
Jess asked with a frown.
Shh,
Jeb said, not looking away from Acorn. He couldn't afford to show weakness here. I'll give you 20 M&Ms to map out all the mini-bosses and rewards and such. Jeb rattled his bag of candy.
What?
Jess said, her eyes wide.
We don't like M&Ms anymore,
Acorn said, crossing his arms.
Our pupae have already hatched, and we have no more need for your devilish sweets.
Oh, really? Jeb asked, pulling out an M&M and eating it in front of the fairy leader. The little person stuck his nose up, seemingly uninterested. So, it's come to this. Fine. I guess I'll have to enjoy this Baby Ruth all by myself, Jeb said, opening the wrapper on the candy bar.
Try all you like, tempter. We are no longer controlled by our sugar lust. We must build nests and clothing for our young.
As he spoke, Acorn became gradually more and more fixated on Jessica's brilliant orange blonde hair. He landed on her shoulder unbeknownst to the assassin,
fixated on the individual strands and running his tiny fingers through them. 2 inches, Jeb said.
All of it,
Acorn fired back. Is there something on my shoulder? Jessica asked.
Not a chance. You wouldn't get any without my help. 2 inches is plenty for you.
Not true,
Acorn said, bracing himself and yanking on a single strand.
Ow!
Jess swatted at the side of her head, but Acorn was already out of the way, holding up an orange-gold strand in the air and cackling as he buzzed above them.
We can get plenty without you, M&M Lord, but if we give you these secrets, you will no longer need us.
Hey, Jess, Jeb said, glancing back down at the assassin. What's your rock bottom for the shortest hairstyle you'd be willing to have? In exchange for a map of the forest with notes on where to find rewards and mini-bosses.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Jessica asked with a tone that seriously questioned Jeb's priorities.
I don't care about my hair. I'd go bald if it gave us a map with every possible way to boost our stats.
Ha! The pathetic female herself has agreed to the deal. We have an accord.
Acorn crowed victoriously.
Map first, Jeb said, eyeing him. Every possible way to boost stats.
Shit!
Acorn cursed, deflating.
I think I saw Razor in the supply cache,
Jeb said, glancing back to Jessica.
Naturally, the fairies didn't know every possible way to raise stats, but they did their best, and the map was pretty darn comprehensive.
With Jessica clearing the path of monsters in front of him, they were able to find their first quarry, the Krusker Lord. The mini-bosses in the other cardinal directions were a bad fit for Jeb, so they decided to push for the Krusker Lord. Stupid, slow, and heavy was Jeb's ideal target.
There it is,
Jessica said, consulting the map, her newly shaved head pale white above her freckled face. In the distance, a massive Krusker was snuffling through a big green glowing bush, crunching on the roots. Crackling electricity flowed up its back as it ate. If the other Kruskers looked like pygmy rhinos, this thing looked like a rhino. Like a walking tank that could flip a truck on its side kind of rhino. The only difference was the shape of the face around the horn was flatter, wider, and more evil-looking.
Hey, is that bush glowing for you?
Jeb whispered, pointing at the object of the Krusker's desire. Jess glanced back at him with a frown.
No.
Maybe there's something misty about that plant.
All right. Begin Operation Silent but Deadly,
Jeb whispered, using mist to pull himself up into the branches of the nearby tree without making a sound. He crouched in the crook of the branch and got himself comfortable. The assassin climbed up beside him, equally silent and swift as a spider.
You're not naming any more operations, she whispered before leaping to the next branch.
We'll see about that,
Jeb thought, pulling his first spear out while they surrounded the hapless animal.
Montero, Lord of the Krusker Range.
Montero was a simple Krusker. Good food, good mating, and extreme aggression towards anything that could possibly be a threat had served him well his entire life. He didn't even know his name. It wasn't something he called himself, but rather the collective name the spirits of the forest and odd natives of Pharaohs used to refer to the Krusker.
Glow root, yummy, belly full. Fill belly more!
The satisfying crunch of the glow root was music to the Krusker Lord's ears. He'd long since pushed any rivals out of his territory, and all sows were his to mount.
Rattle. Montero's head jerked up, and he scanned the woods.
There!
His little Krusker brain went through the order of operations it applied to everything in a matter of microseconds.
Eat. Moving. So maybe after kill. Fuck. No, not so. Kill. Kill. Kill!
The bush continued shaking as Montero charged, his Bernie thingy bursting with power, sending lightning crashing across his entire body, strengthening his bristly skin and making his muscles swell. Ever since the day he'd accidentally formed the Mist Corps, he'd had an edge over the other Kruskers,
although he didn't know enough to attribute it to the crackling energy inside him, nor did he really know what it was or how to use it exactly. He just knew that he squeezed it when he charged, just like he squeezed all his other muscles, and it made things die. It was the embodiment of power for him. To this day, he still remembered witnessing a bolt of lightning strike a massive oak, forming his ideal of power. Montero let out a ferocious squeal and charged the interloper, shaking the bush, aiming to strike like lightning. White lightning arced out a fraction of a second ahead of him and exploded the bush, followed by his magnificent horn and then his magnificent hooves as he trampled the bush and whatever it had been hiding. Pain? Pain! There was a splinter of some kind in Montero's chest, grating against his tough bones. Montero couldn't quite see it, so he did what he always did when something attacked him from a point he couldn't see. He charged some more, squeezing the burny thingy as hard as he could. Jeb. Jesus, it's a miracle this thing hasn't killed itself already. Jeb didn't voice his disbelief out loud, though. The damn thing weighed as much as a tank, and the unfortunate tree beside the bush was completely demolished as it began charging everything. The broken spear dangling from its chest was the only casualty of their opening move. Jeb had floated his first spear over to the opposite side of the boar along with two more in other positions, before he'd made it start shaking the bush violently. The Kresker hadn't even bothered to pause to identify the threat. It just charged right into the spear hidden in the bush, earning itself a deep stab wound in its chest. That's how a human hunts, dickwad. Jeb reached out with his mist and took control of one of the spears he'd secreted in another bush. He started shaking it. The Kresker squealed in surprise, its head jerking up again, locking eyes on the bush before committing to a wholehearted charge. It got another blade in the chest for its efforts. Now there were two spearheads dangling from the boss monster's chest, the flow of blood roughly doubled. It's so much easier when I don't have to hold the spear my own damn self, Jeb thought, thinking back on how stupid he'd been to try and stop even a small one's charge with just a spear. If I had just known how to use mist. Jeb shook his head. Intrusive self-recriminating thoughts about the loss of his foot were to be expected. He'd been on the wrong side of the couch long enough to know what to expect. If I'd known about the subprime lending crisis, I'd be a millionaire instead of a retired grunt. Doesn't matter. He reached out and started shaking spear number three. Shaka, shaka, shaka. The Kresker's head popped up again, and it snorted, pawing the ground like it was going to charge again, but then it didn't. Instead, it snorted again, then started snuffling, lifting its head higher as it sniffed the air. Oh, crap. It turned away from where Jeb was shaking the bush, following its nose in Jeb's direction. The two of them locked eyes. The Kresker Lord and the vet shared a special moment.
Yeah? What are you going to do about it? I'm a smart monkey in my goddamn tree!
Jeb said, flipping the bastard off. The Kresker charged him, lightning coating its body, causing its wounds to cauterize as the spearheads were flung free.
Damn.
Jeb had a choice here. Go for even more damage, or run away. Let's go for the biscuits. Rather than grabbing onto his weapon and levitating himself away like a witch on a broom, he took his strongest spear, a short spear made of pure steel. Possibly some fanboy's attempt to recreate a Gundam's pile driver weapon, and braced it against the tree. Crunch, crash. The entire tree bucked out from underneath him with far more force than he'd been expecting, throwing him flailing to the ground. Jeb flipped over and got to his feet. Foot. With that kind of near-death adrenaline that makes you feel like Usain goddamn Bolt, pokey underbrush completely ignored. There, only a few feet away, the Kresker stumbled backward, iron spike embedded deep in his left eye. The wailing creature bellowed with a force that made Jeb clap his hands over his ears and stagger backwards, hop backwards to topple over a nearby bush when his reflexive kick with his right foot caught nothing.
Damn it!
The Kresker's single remaining eye was bloodshot with rage as it focused on him. In the distance, he heard the hoofbeats of dozens more of the squat little bastards approaching, ready to trample him into a fine paste and then eat him. Maybe not even in that order. Crap! The big lug lowered its horn and charged. With panicked speed, Jeb infused his last weapon, the trusty short sword, with a healthy dosage of mist, yanking the weapon in his hand to the right into the creature's newly created blind spot. Jeb awkwardly skated over the ground, pulled by his sword, the creature's lightning aura singeing his hair and sending up the smell of ozone as it charged past. Once Jeb was out of its way, he pulled up as hard as he could, dragging himself into the air, struggling against his own weight. Standard speed and weight was about 160 pounds at 3 feet per second. Read around walking speed. Those numbers were going up every day, but that was approximately where he stood right now. To move Jeb and his gear, a total of about 195 pounds, he had to drop his speed drastically. That meant he was about 4 feet into the air when the Kresker turned, looking for where the human had disappeared to. Jeb cursed and drew his legs up, barely out of range of the creature's maddened thrust, the lightning arcing from its nose to his pants. Jeb's pants scorched but didn't catch fire, admirably protecting him against the creature's lightning. A couple of seconds later, he was out of its range, dangling from a sword. The boss squealed in indignation, stamping its feet and trying to charge him, but the poor creature couldn't fly. "Yeah, tough luck," Jeb said, glaring back down at it, at an impasse. In the distance, Jeb heard the clomping feet of more Kreskers as they flooded into the clearing, their eyes mad with rage. Behind the lead Kresker, Jeb made out Jessica flickering past one of the thick-skinned creatures, her sword drawn anime style. A second later, she disappeared again, and a burst of blood erupted from the creature's throat, similarly anime style. She then continued to cull the herd by flickering between Kreskers at a speed his eyes couldn't even keep track of. Well, I guess anything's possible with magic. Here goes nothing. Nothing like a proof of concept while you're in the shit. Jeb siphoned a bit of mist out, aiming for the broken spearheads in the distance. As soon as he did, his control over the short sword in his hand wobbled, then failed, and he began plummeting to the ground. With desperate speed, he switched back to controlling the sword, wasting the mist he'd spent on both the new object and the original investment in his sword. He felt the fledgling star in his chest flicker a little as he dipped into its reserves. Like he promised he wouldn't do. Damn it, probably sit myself back a couple hours there. And with only 4 days until the safe zones vanished, he didn't really have a lot of time to spare. Okay, two things at once feels like juggling babies. We're not going to be able to do that just yet. All right, think. What's the safest, most boring way to kill this thing? I can't afford to spend any more mist. And I can't afford to get hurt again. Well, buddy, Jeb thought, looking down at the infuriated Kresker. Looks like we're doing this the long and painful way. He floated over to a nearby tree. The Kresker annihilated it. He floated to the next one. Same thing. Gradually, he led the boss monster on a rampage through the forest, draining its stamina over time as it brained itself over and over on tree after tree. The iron spike sticking out of its eye made it squeal in pain every time it rammed a new tree, but the stupid thing didn't know the meaning of the word quit. Eventually, when the lightning died on the Kresker's back and the damn thing was fighting for breath, Jeb struck. He simply dropped out of the air, riding the short sword straight down. In addition to the pull of gravity, Jeb assisted with mist, allowing him to plummet fast enough to catch the creature off guard. He dropped on its head and sank the short sword into the creature's good eye, putting all his weight and telekinesis behind it. It was barely enough strength to push through the creature's frightfully strong eyelid. Up until this point, he'd let the damn thing impale itself, which had worked pretty well, but that was because the Kresker was outrageously strong. His telekinesis-assisted stab barely put out its eye, stopping shortly after penetrating the orb itself, not nearly as deep as the iron spike. But it did what it needed to do. The Kresker was blind now.
It threw its head up in outrage, bucking violently. Jeb and his sword flew off into the woods, landing in a bush. The Kresker squealed and thrashed, trying to kill every living thing within a 20-foot radius, shattering trees and missing Jeb's face with its dinner plate-sized hooves by mere inches. Jeb remained still and silent, pulling in mist and burning it, rebuilding the corona of energy around his star. The Kresker went still, sniffing around for Jeb. Jeb used the distraction to pull the short sword out before he released control over his short sword and reached out for the iron spike, yanking it forcibly out of the Kresker's skull. The Kresker's struggling redoubled as blood began to pour out of its face. Whenever the creature stopped to smell for him again, Jeb directed the spike to stab it in the nose, using the noise of the resulting tantrum to hop further away, making sure to keep thick trees between himself and the monster to ward off stray hoof kicks. It wasn't a fair fight. It wasn't graceful. It was long, protracted, and ugly. But it got the job done. Finally, after over an hour, the Kresker died of its wounds. Jeb knew because of the onslaught of levels. You have gained a level. You have gained a level. You have gained a level. You are now level 13. Congratulations! You have beaten the Kresker Lord Montero in a one-on-one duel. Your physical might is beyond reproach. My physical? Jeb glanced up at Jessica, who was approaching from the side, inspecting her dinged and dented blade. It wasn't going to put up with much more abuse at this rate. Is anyone actually watching these tutorials? Kresker's brawn accolade granted. +5 body. Jeb held his breath, waiting for the pain, but nothing came. Maybe it's... His jaw started to cramp. Jeb reached his hand up to massage it, and that started to cramp. Oh, shit! He bit out the words through clenched teeth as his entire body tightened up in one massive, painful cramp. It wouldn't hurt so damn much if his muscles would just relax, but they were roiling up like a shade with the counterweight cut.
Son of a bitch!
Yeah, first couple points made me pretty sore, Jessica said, sitting down next to him. It's best to take some cooldown time between them.
5!
Jeb panted through his lockjaw.
All at once!
Damn, Jessica said, her eyebrows rising. That'll be interesting. Jeb lay there in the middle of the chaos and dozens of dead Kreskers, waiting for his body to come to terms with his newfound power. While he was waiting, he decided to assign the extra 3 points from his levels for killing the boss. If he was going to be in pain, might as well get it all taken care of at once. He put them in mist, obviously. Jebediah Trapper, unclassed, level 13, body 10, mist 28, nerve 8. Once that was done, Jeb tried to distract himself by focusing on drawing in mist to build his inner star. Bigger and bigger, baby. The ability to move things at about walking speed was cool, but nowhere near exploding heads or mind bullets. Every confrontation always uncovered flaws in your thinking, unseen depths to your situation, and it was a wise man that took the time to stop and reflect on them at the end of the day. 1. Is it possible to control more than one object at a time? 2. Is it possible to move a floppy object or one with joints? So far, he'd only moved stiff, unyielding objects or chunks of dirt with no articulation. Gotta work on that. After about 15 minutes of agony, Jeb's muscles slowly relaxed, allowing him to get to his feet. Foot. It was surprisingly easy, like his body had been turned into a beach ball or something, and the slightest push sent him reeling several feet in that direction.
You get used to it,
Jessica said, looking amused as he toppled to the ground, his missing foot making adjusting harder than it had to be.
Ding! Your party has cleared the Western Woods dungeon. Please take your rewards.
I thought we got our rewards,
Jeb said, glancing at Jessica.
What rewards is it talking about?
If I had to guess, there's a separate reward for soloing the boss and clearing the whole place.
No sooner had she said that than the mist convulsed around them, condensing to form a massive 10-foot-wide sphincter beside the defeated boss, which then proceeded to shit out a chest. Jeb blinked.
There it is.
Jessica said, approaching the mist turd, popping open the lid with a firm tug.
You didn't see how that thing was made, did you? Jeb asked.
What? It just manifested out of twinkling light, like it was 3D printed or something,
Jessica said, glancing back at him.
Oh, what's this?
As she spoke, another sphincter appeared next to Jeb, causing him to flinch backwards as it deposited a chest next to him.
Well, Jeb said with a shrug, when in Rome.
He opened the chest, ignoring its origins. Inside was a slightly curved longsword made of blue steel with jagged lines, thorny, as if it had been violently bent out of shape and then returned to form by a drunk, angry blacksmith. He picked it up and information flowed into his mind.
Longsword, razorback, +3 body. This sword was made by a possessed smith who summoned demons specifically to hunt down the Kresker who killed his love. The sword survived, he did not. Its reliability in battle is unquestionable, repairing itself over time with the blood of the vanquished. The sword has a legacy of blood and violence that runs deep.
He glanced over at Jessica and spotted her looking at the sword longingly. In her hand was something that could be described as, Oh, hell. It's a magical girl wand. It was bright pastel yellows and pinks with a star at the top. It might even have been made of plastic. Wordlessly, the two of them each tossed the item in their hand to the other.
Wand of cleansing. Inject mist to remove filth and grime from any surface. Power is dependent on the amount of mist. Ever popular with spellcasters and housewives across the globe, the wand of cleansing is a must-have in any well-prepared sorceress's arsenal. Cutting chore times in half and taming the unpleasant stains and odors of adventuring is as simple as a wave of the wand. Barbarian refusing to take a bath because water is unlucky? Cleansing! Did the party just fall into a bog? Cleansing! Choosy witches choose cleansing! TM.
Jeb finished reading the description on the item, then glanced over at Jessica.
I feel kind of greasy, like I've just seen both sides of the gender advertising divide.
If it knew you were a guy, Jessica said, putting the sword over her shoulder, it would have been all about maintaining your gear and keeping it in peak condition.
She made air quotes as she spoke.
Yeah, along with disinfecting wounds and preventing gangrene,
Jeb said with a chuckle, inspecting the wand.
If it had said that and looked like a black tactical flashlight, I probably wouldn't have thought twice about it.
Upon closer inspection, it still looked like a cheap plastic toy, but there was writing on the side.
The cleansing wand emits a penetrating cone of cleansing light that scours away grime, removing it from existence. To use, hold the wand in your dominant hand and inject mist into the bottom of the wand while aiming at the objects or person to be cleaned. The cleansing wand is not rated for more than 125 nitsu of mist per second. Any more may break the wand and result in severe injury or death. Do not use cleansing wand in a manner other than for its intended purpose. Do not tamper with cleansing wand. Doing so voids all warranty and may result in serious injury or death. Life Aid is not liable for any damages caused by using the product other than for its intended purpose. Note: grime is defined by the user's subconscious. Life Aid is not responsible for aberrant users who view other people as grime.
At the bottom of the wand was a little rounded cap with the words, "Insert mist here," stenciled onto it.
Huh,
Jeb grunted, rereading the label, complete with warnings.
What?
You know how you can turn hairspray into a flamethrower and a microwave into a gun that can cook people from a distance? And fertilizer into an IED?
Jeb asked.
Yeah.
I think the same concept applies here, he said, eyeing the seam of the cheap plastic wand.
If it said tampering with it could lead to severe injury or death, that meant careful tampering could lead to severe injury or death for other people.
We'll put that on the back burner, Jeb thought, slipping the wand in his belt. Even if it was pink and girly and somewhat condescendingly marketed towards women, it was still his first piece of genuine magical equipment.
All right, where to next? Jeb asked, pulling out the map. Chapter 4. The Worm Stick. 3 days, 7 hours remaining until safe zones expire. Okay, so there should be some kind of treasure in here, Jeb said as they crawled beneath the low-hanging branches of a bunch of weeping willows. Or at least they look like weeping willows. I'm not a botanist. They were forced to squat and crab walk through the area because of the lack of standing room.
The map says, and I quote, "A raw mist lens capable of creating an infinite cornucopia of food is preserved in the low-hanging forest,"
Jessica said, glancing between the map and the nearby landmark, which in this case was a giant hominid skull. Starving to death was an outcome to be avoided. If there was an object that could convert mist into food, they could move light, and if one of them got injured, as long as Jeb had mist, they could hunker down and avoid endangering themselves by hunting. Why is it called a lens, though? Jeb wondered as they scanned the forest floor, searching for some kind of piece of glass or gem or something. Jeb imagined a golden gem on the end of some kind of cornucopia horn. He should have known by now that nothing with mist was simple.
I don't think there's anything here. If this lens was here, maybe another team already got it, Jessica said.
There was no guarantee they were the only survivors, after all. They'd seen signs of humans every now and then, but after his experience with Redbeard's group, Jeb was hesitant to actively seek them out. Once bitten, twice shy, I suppose. Given his ability to negotiate with fairies and move shit with his mind, Jeb could more than pull his weight, so to speak. But those traits weren't visible to the naked eye, and if there was anything Jeb knew about human nature from the army, it was this. If nobody saw you doing something, you didn't do it. The point being, if his prospective teammates couldn't quantify or comprehend his contribution to their team, he'd most likely sink to the bottom of the group's totem pole, being a cripple. He'd get saddled with all the menial shit, like skinning potatoes and cleaning gear, in addition to fairy negotiations and using telekinesis to help fight monsters. Being the fairy bitch didn't sound like a particularly good deal to him, so Jeb was neutral about finding a larger group to work with. Jessica didn't seem particularly eager to find another group either, for various reasons. So they didn't follow up on these traces, going their own way instead. You might be right. We can't afford to spend all afternoon on this one thing. 20 minutes, Jeb said. Jessica nodded, scanning the ground and low-hanging branches as they scuttled through the greenery. It's not up in the trees, is it? Jeb thought, glancing up, but not spotting anything. He turned his gaze back to the ground, scanning the damp forest floor. A bit of wiggling movement caught the corner of his eye and he glanced over. There was a stick lying in the grass, partially rotted, and covered with worms that seemed to be having a grand time wiggling all over it. Weird, Jeb muttered, crawling over to it and picking it up. The stick was about as thick as his wrist, covered with dark spots of rot, a foot long, and bearing a stub where a smaller branch had sheared away. It was just a stick, but the worms didn't obediently fall off when he picked it up, either, clinging with uncharacteristic tenacity.
What's weird?
Jessica asked, glancing back at him. Jeb held the stick up so she could see it.
So, it's a stick.
You don't see the worms?
What worms?
Here, Jeb said, crawling over to her and holding it up for her to inspect. She glanced down at the stick for a moment, then looked him in the eye.
What worms? She asked.
Jeb held the stick closer to his face, blinking and trying to clear his vision. There were definitely worms on the stick. Idly, he tried to scrape them off, sloughing the worms off onto the ground, where they faded away. Worms emerged from the stick, once again clasping tight to the rotted wood. Okay, Jeb said, eyeing the ghost worms.
Okay, what?
You should really raise your mist.
Jeb said, glancing over at her. And start talking to myself? She waggled her hand. I'm good. Mist lens. Maybe.
Jeb siphoned mist out of his core, then pushed it through the rotten stick. He watched as the mist poured into the rotten stick, then refracted outwards in 1,000 different directions like motes of light. Imagine this. A piece of polished glass shaped exactly like a rotted stick. You put light into it, and the bumpy and crooked nature of the stick causes the light to scatter in every direction. That was exactly what happened to the mist Jeb put into the worm stick. It scattered in every direction like beams of light, peppering everything in the vicinity with tiny motes of mist. Everywhere one of these motes landed, a worm was created. A real goddamn earthworm, filling the clearing with thousands of the wriggling bastards. Needless to say, tons of motes landed on Jeb and Jessica, as well as the tree branches above them. Jess actually made the first girlish squeal Jeb had ever heard her make as dozens of worms rained down from the branches above, landing on her shaved scalp before wriggling around in irritation. Jeb's girlish squeal wasn't far behind hers, honestly.
Ah, son of a bitch!
Jeb shouted, scrambling out of the low-hanging canopy and brushing himself off violently, while Jessica did her own little ants-in-the-pants dance off to the side. Once they were worm-free, Jeb looked at the stick more closely.
You know, I think this is...
Don't say it,
Jessica warned, pointing her sword at him threateningly.
The fairy cornucopia.
Jeb finished inspecting it further. Finally, he felt something kick in behind his eyes, revealing the object's identity to him. Raw worm summoning mist lens. Gargantuan. These finger-length sticks coalesce in areas of dim light and natural decay, and have been used by fairy clans for generations to guarantee a source of food in even the leanest times. The farmers of Pharaohs will often hire shamans with these lenses to bless their fields, as worms will greatly enhance the quality of the soil as they go through their life cycle underground. Jeb glanced back under the low-hanging branches. He had noticed before, but one of the worms was a good 2 feet long, wiggling vigorously, as big around as his thumb, while some others were tiny and nearly hair-thin. Did it depend on how big the moat was? He thought, looking back at the stick. The information said they were supposed to be the size of a finger, and that his was gargantuan. I think I'll hang on to this. Jessica sighed.
I'm only eating worms if the alternative is violent death or starvation.
Fair enough,
Jeb said, tucking the worm stick in his belt right next to his cleaning stick, before consulting the map. Newly alerted to the fact that the map was written from a fairy's point of view, Jeb consulted their next location more judiciously, skipping things like super amazing flying machine or heavy artillery. If the cornucopia summoned worms, chances were the flying machine could fit a couple fairies if they were lucky, and the heavy artillery probably fired nuts. He focused on things they knew would benefit them: bosses, stat-boosting treasure, and mist lenses. A few hundred meters away was a dungeon of giant, flesh-devouring beetles. Chances were they weren't actually that big. The dungeon itself was a small one-room affair, and it was said to guard a human relic, some kind of circlet that increased nerve. If they could get that, his nerve might be high enough to attempt the sirens to the south. Defeat them, and then they could go north or west. Jeb hoped soloing the siren boss would award him the extra nerve he needed to stay competitive. But if it didn't, he'd reluctantly drop a few points from his levels into the trait. Not being able to see Jessica move was a bit eye-opening. And the stealthy creatures to the north and west demanded a great deal of nerve to spot before they ambushed. Jeb didn't want to get diced up or poisoned before he knew what was going on. That meant he had to take the forest's bosses in the appropriate order. But first, we're going to see if we can't get this crown thing. The dungeon itself wasn't hard to find. It was a raised barrel-like mound of dirt with a cavernous entrance leading into darkness.
When he shined a light into the dungeon, it revealed a short hallway followed by a room with a jewelry box inside of it. Easy peasy.
Let me go first, Jessica said. There could be traps. We were in one like this a while ago that had saw blades. It killed one of our guys.
As tempted as Jeb was to man up and take the lead, he understood that without his foot and having significantly lower physical attributes, he was probably dead weight in the heat of the moment. He waved her ahead and she ducked into the doorway, followed shortly by Jeb.
I wonder if the ceiling is stable.
Jeb pondered as he hopped down the hall, which was why he missed the glowing beam of light that appeared ahead of Jessica until it was too late.
Hold up, Jeb said, trying to grab her shoulder, but her foot had already gone through the beam.
What?
Jess whispered, tensing. Jeb didn't answer, watching in amazement as a line of bright energy flashed along the hall, deeper into the room where it rose into the ceiling. A fraction of a second later, 1,000 beams of mist touched the floor, and 1,000 scarabs were created in the blink of an eye. A fraction of a second after that, the light pulsed again, and another 1,000 scarabs were birthed nearly directly on top of the others. And again, and again. 15 times the light pulsed, forming a roiling mound of flesh-eating scarabs.
Crap! We should...
Jeb's voice cut off when he heard the door closing behind him. He glanced over his shoulder and spotted a cleverly disguised wall of stone sliding into their way.
Damn it.
Jessica lunged past him and struck the wall of stone with her fist, creating a thunderclap that echoed through the one-room dungeon. The stone shrugged it off.
Son of a bitch!
Jessica growled, slamming the wall again. In the distance, the swarm of scarabs was beginning to investigate the noises in the hallway along with the interesting smells.
We just need some time, Jeb said, mind racing. There's probably a lever in the main room that opens the door.
What, past the death swarm?
She demanded. True to her words, the swarm was nearly 3 feet tall, 10 feet wide, and approaching rapidly, leaving no room in the cramped hallway to skirt around or over them.
Stay calm. We're gonna wait them out, Jeb said, pulling out his new toy.
No way, you...
You're gonna want to cover your mouth, Jeb said, drawing in as much mist as he possibly could, burning it, then funneling his Coarse Corona through the stick in pulses, mimicking the trap's summoning mechanism. In moments, the hall was flooded with squirming worms. Delicious squirming worms. Jeb formed the last of his free energy into a thin wall of mist between them and the rest of the hallway, forming a telekinetic barrier. Moments later, the swarm of hungry scarabs crashed over Jeb's worms like a wave, consuming everything they could get their mandibles around. They pressed up against the barrier, forming a flat wall of blue beetle carapaces, heedless of the two humans holding their breath on the other side, praying that it would hold. Jeb could feel their weight pressing against the telekinetic wall, focusing all his might on keeping it as steady and strong as possible. After a good 10 minutes, the feeding frenzy began to slow down as the scarabs ate their fill of worm. Stuffed and lethargic like it was Thanksgiving Day, the beetles gradually unswarmed, forming a thin coat of iridescent carapaces across the floor, walls, and ceiling as they went into hibernation to sleep off their glorious meal. The whole weight Jeb was pulling in more mist, getting ready to do it again if he had to.
Can you make it to the next room? He whispered once things had settled down.
Jess glanced at the beetle-studded walls and nodded.
My class ability as an assassin allows me to lower my mass to nearly zero, she whispered back. I can walk over these guys without them even feeling it.
That explains how she did those enemy-style attacks.
The bridge is yours,
Jeb said, disconnecting from the barrier and watching it diffuse into the environment. True to her word, Jessica was able to walk across the beetles without them even noticing, using tiny finger holds on either side of the wall to basically float past the beetles on the floor. She got into the main room, looked around a bit, and turned left out of sight of the primary hall. A second later, the door began rumbling open. The beetles did not like that. Their antennae twitched, and they seemed to rouse themselves as the walls shook.
Jessica landed feet first on the far wall like an astronaut in zero-G and jumped down the hall, speeding down the short hall without touching anything except for Jeb. Jessica slammed into him and the two of them tumbled out of the dungeon into the free air of the outside. They got to their feet, making sure the swarm wasn't closing in on them and getting ready to take some more distance if that was the case. The swarm seemed to have no interest in crossing the threshold into the outside world, clumping up near the entrance. They were still full, after all, and not interested in going outside their territory. Still need that circlet. Damn, if only I could make fireballs or something. Oh, wait. Idea! Jeb haggled with one of the local fairies to bring him the bottle of antiseptic alcohol and the first aid kit back at base camp. And a few minutes later, he was squeezing the clear liquid on the swarm, grinning like a backyard barbecuer. And I cast fireball, Jeb said, dropping one of the survival matches on the swarm. It went up in flames, and the two of them spent the next few minutes resting, listening to the pop and hiss of scarab bodies ruptured by the heat of the flames. You have gained a level. You are now level 14. Jebediah Trapper, unclassed, level 14, body 10, miss 29, nerve 8. Later. 3 days, 4 hours until safe zones disappear. You sure you don't want to try one? Jeb asked, holding out a cooked scarab. Some butter and these things would taste just like crab. Jessica sighed and took the scarab out of his hand and popped its back off with her thumb before hesitantly scraping the meat out with her teeth, imitating him as best she could. Damn, she said, looking down at the roasted insect in her palm with newfound respect. Right? The next time they went into the dungeon, Jeb took the lead, inching forward and carefully watching for any beams of light. He spotted the beam right where it had been last time and drew a little circle around it with a piece of charcoal before continuing on. Jessica dutifully hopped over the mark and followed after him. The room was a simple setup, a square room with a lever on the left, a jewelry box on an altar at the far end, and an unlit candle nook on the right side. Minus the trap, it was downright insultingly easy. Jeb opened the jewelry box from a distance with telekinesis, wary of another trap, but nothing happened. The box contained the circlet of nerve. As Jeb had feared, the circlet wasn't big enough to put on his head. It was a tarnished silver ring just big enough to put on his pinky finger. It would be the right size for a fairy to wear on their head, though, he thought, holding the ring in his hand and staring intently at it. A moment later, the item's details showed up in front of him. Silver Adventurer's Ring of Discretion, +3 nerve. Commissioned by a noblewoman for her somewhat clumsy, somewhat dull-witted grandson, this ring subtly saved his life countless times before he made the dubious decision to trade it in for a shield with a stronger body enchantment. On paper, the trade was a numerical benefit. However, the young lad immediately set about testing his new shield in the poison swamp, proving once again that there is no permanent cure for stupidity. Not bad, Jeb said, sliding it on his left pinky. A moment later, he felt like he'd just woken up from a long sleep. He was alert and aware in a way he'd never really been before. He felt like he'd been sleepwalking with his eyes closed. He could see where everything was. The light level in the room seemed to have risen by several shades. Everything looked and sounded so vibrant. And he could feel his blood pumping through his fingertips, his face, his cock. Thinking about it made the problem worse.
Did it raise nerve?
Jessica shouted at him.
Stop shouting,
Jeb whispered, turning back to face her. He was immediately dumbstruck by the sheer beauty that stood in front of him.
Wow, you're pretty, even without the hair.
In the sunlight, it was just like orange fire, which was magnificent, but without it, you've got this sharp but luscious thing going on. She raised an eyebrow and glanced down at his crotch.
The euphoria will fade in a couple minutes. Don't do or say anything you'll regret.
Shouting,
Jeb said, clutching his ears. Jessica smirked, but she didn't say anything. just sitting her perfect body down, her pants tightening around her hips as she crossed her legs, watching him with amusement. He could see the way she filled out the armor, and he could imagine with perfect clarity how she was filling it up, her breasts squeezing against the plate as she breathed.
"I'm just gonna face this direction for a minute," Jeb said, turning away, taking deep, calming breaths. A minute or two later, his senses were no longer out of whack, and he was able to turn around without undressing his partner with his eyes. Still pretty, but not intoxicatingly so.
"Out of all the attribute sicknesses," Jeb said, glancing up at the ceiling,
"I think that's the most embarrassing one."
"Really? What's Miss Sickness like?" Jessica asked, getting to her feet.
"It feels like someone's tearing apart your skull and you bleed from every hole on your face."
"Yikes," she said, throwing her sword over her shoulder.
The ceiling was made of tiled stone, but the center tile bore a picture of a blue scarab. A handful of scarabs crawled along the ceiling, content to stay on the tile.
"More treasure?
Why not?"
"Give me a boost," Jeb said, pulling out his pocket knife. A couple awkward minutes later, he'd managed to pry the business end of the booby trap off the ceiling, revealing a delicately carved bone with 1,000 tiny indents carefully etched into the surface. Blue scarabs crawled along its surface, but none of them were real.
"Processed starving beetle summoning mist lens, large. These bone-shaped lenses coalesce in the dunes of the Bogash Desert, where insects fight for every scrap of food they can find. They are a novelty in most parts of the world, although there are some wizards from those exotic parts who use these lenses as part of their spell work. This mist lens has been worked to create 1,024 equal-sized starving beetles as part of a trap." Jeb worked his knife behind it and carefully pried the square of bone out of the wall, dropping it in his pocket. If nothing else, he could use it to make more food. Crab was arguably better than worm.
"Got what you wanted?"
Jessica asked as she set him down effortlessly.
"Yep,"
Jeb said, patting his pocket. "Got the business end of the trap."
"Good, let's go,"
she said, pointing toward the exit. Jeb was about to take his last hop out the door when iron fingers grabbed the back of his brigandine and yanked him backwards. A pair of gnashing jaws slammed shut in front of the entrance, a hair's breadth from his face. Chapter 5. Necro Barter. Jeb let out a choked cry as Jessica flung him backwards into the tiny dungeon, charging out to meet the creature face to face. Jeb landed on his ass right in the middle of the beam of light, triggering the magical swarm a second time. The mist shot out of the ceiling, blinking like a strobe light, stirring the dust on the floor a bit, but not doing anything other than that.
"Thank God I disarmed this thing," he thought, turning his gaze back to the fight.
Jessica was doing glorious battle with something that looked like a cross between an oriental dragon and a tapeworm, with huge gnashing jaws that seemed to primarily be made of bone or chitin. Jessica was executing magnificent mid-air maneuvers that boggled the mind, until you recalled her class's ability for operating at effective low G. The fight was swift and brutal, with the snake-like creature being cleaved in two in a matter of seconds, falling to the ground in two massive bleeding chunks. The creature's jaw was still trying to bite down on something, weakly opening and closing, even though the creature's eyes were already devoid of light.
"The fuck is that?"
Jeb asked, getting to his feet and peering out the door. The whole thing must have been 30 feet long, a great white shark/eel on land.
"It's a wandering monster. We saw some of them hanging around the world tortoise once," she said. "This one must have been level 15 or so," she said, kicking the creature.
"Parasites," Jeb said.
"Huh?"
"Parasites. They live on the world tortoise. Going up there and trying to kill the thing is like kicking a wasp's nest the size of a football field."
How do you know that?"
"Mystical powers,"
Jeb said, waggling his fingers. He glanced over his shoulder at the dungeon they had just left. He absolutely would love to take the rest of the guts of the trap, If he could secure the power source along with the repeater and trigger mechanism, he could probably make some kind of mystical machine gun. Alas, Jeb was incapable of cutting through solid rock with his mind. Yet. And they only had 3 days before there would be no safe place to sleep. They needed to spend all that time achieving a basic level of self-sufficiency, not spend days trying to chisel stone for a maybe. Still. Jeb glanced at his map, scanning the land to the deep west. In the Flaming Mountains, the fairies had spotted a fire lens. Magical laser gun would be pretty bitchin'. It'll go on the list if we get good enough to go there. Otherwise, it's superfluous. I also need to learn more about mist and lenses. Between the boss monster and exploring the local map, he needed some time to rest and do a little research. 3 days, 1 hour until safe zone removal. You may look at the map, Jeb said, holding it out for Jessica. She narrowed her eyes, but the circumstances of their meeting didn't exactly give Jeb full confidence in her. If she wanted to track down one or two treasures and bring them back while he rested, great. But giving her the map so she could potentially ditch him for a better outfit? They didn't know each other that well.
Okay, it's memorized, she said, nodding. Thanks.
Ugh, crap, nerve.
Nerve, she said, tapping her skull. I'll be back in 2 hours if I'm still alive. I'll be looking for the shielding bracers and the vivicant cane.
She poked two spots near their safe zone. She looked him up and down.
You could use a cane.
Hey! Get out of here, Jeb said, waving her off. Freaking nerve. It was somewhat emasculating to be outclassed mentally. On the other hand, I can move things with my mind. There was really no putting a price tag on that. Once Jess was gone, Jeb called Acorn down to haggle. Now that the fairies were in the nesting phase, he was forced to get more creative. Eventually selling a bit of the silk liner of his brigandine for the information he was looking for. What is a mist lens and why do we need them? He asked Acorn.
A mist lens converts one form of mist to another. They're integral to wizardry in general. Mist lenses coalesce in areas that are filled with the memory of their focus.
Sunny places make sunny lenses, watery ones make watery ones, and so on? Jeb asked. He was pretty sure that was the case, given the positioning of the worm one and the fire one on his map, but confirmation was good.
Yes, exactly,
Acorn shouted, pointing at him.
The variety of lenses in the world is practically infinite. There are so many that haven't been discovered yet, and even between similar lenses there are variations. The sunny lens you spoke of. There are dappled ones and ones that carry the scent of freshly mown grass. At public servant exams, you can find studying lenses and ulcer lenses taking the form of erasers. There's practically no limit. The only issue is that the rarer lenses take a higher mist to identify as magical.
So is it possible to cast a spell without using one of these? Acorn stared at him for a moment, his jaw slack.
Your car is set. Of course it's not possible.
Explain. Acorn heaved a huge sigh and rolled his eyes, as if Jeb was the slowest kid in the race.
When you develop a mist core, he said, flying down to tap on Jeb's sternum, the mist you process settles into the form of your most ideal magic. After it is set, you cannot change it.
So, since I thought telekinesis was cool, that's what it settled on?
Pretty much.
Disappointing, but not the worst power to be stuck with. After all, telekinesis was pretty fucking cool. There were also interesting connotations behind the fact that these lenses could effectively change mist from one wavelength to another. Does the mist actually behave like light when interacting with a lens? Jeb thought, his mind buzzing. The idea had been tickling the back of his mind for a while, but after talking with Acorn, he was nearly positive.
If mist behaves like light, then if I were to carve the worm stick into the shape of a lens, I could make it summon a giant freaking worm. Or put two indents on it to split the light and make two giant worms. He pulled the square piece of bone out of his pocket and inspected it, still crawling with phantom scarabs. Or carve 32 by 32 dots to summon 1,024 identical worms. Acorn screeched, backing away from the bone lens like it was radioactive.
Do you have any idea what that could do to us?
He said, pointing at the lens with a shaking hand. Nothing good, I imagine, Jeb said. I was planning on saving it for rations. He slipped it back in his pocket. Just to confirm, if the lens concentrates the mist into a single point, it's a more pronounced effect than if it's scattered all over the place, correct?
Of course,
Acorn said, still eyeing Jeb's pocket nervously. If I break a lens apart, will all the pieces of it retain their ability to alter mist?
Yeah. Are you really going to keep that?
Yes. Are creatures that I create with these lenses under my control? Acorn shook his head.
Not without some kind of control lens or taming lens, or your mist core is a summoning one. That's why that lens is so dangerous. If you used that in here and missed killing even a single breeding bear, they might eat all of us.
I promise not to use this lens anywhere near your tree, Jeb said.
Not in the forest at all would be better,
Acorn said. I don't know yet if I'll need it, so I can't promise that. Acorn looked miffed. Well, that was all the burning questions I had for you. Wait. How much would you charge to actually collect these lenses for me?
We physically can't move treasure placed by the system for the tutorial,
Acorn said, shaking his head.
Otherwise, the fairies of the woods would have already looted everything.
Suppose you're right about that, Jeb said, nodding. All right. Now we need to expand our repertoire. Can't expect everything to just run into a spear on its own. Now testing. Floppy objects, and multiple objects at once. For his first test, Jeb grabbed the garrote wire and set it down in front of him, injecting it with mist and lifting it up. The wire stayed looped up like it had been when he first set it down. He turned it upside down and tried to stretch it out, but his mist felt like it was locked in position. The garrote stayed pulled up in a loop, unmoving in his mental grasp. He worked on it for half an hour without any discernible progress, then switched tactics, aiming at learning how to move two things at once. There was more progress on this front. Rather than feeling like an unyielding wall, this simply felt like really difficult juggling. If someone had a gun to your head and told you to learn how to juggle, you'd probably learn pretty fucking quick. Jeb was in the same situation, and he poured all his concentration and focus into mastering the skill. Eventually, he was rewarded with two spears floating independently of each other. There were some caveats, though. Jeb had to target both of them with a fresh batch of mist drawn from his core. Something about splitting the mist into two identical portions was easier than lifting one object than another. He was sure he'd get the hang of it eventually, but for now he needed to target both objects at the same time. Still, it gave him a lot more options than he'd had before. Stab, stab, he thought, the two spears lunging forward at his mental urging. His speed had improved. Jeb had the feeling his core was nowhere near done growing. His magic and the little burning star inside him would continue growing stronger until he stumbled across whatever his limit was, most likely defined by his mist. The setting sun suddenly darkened, and Jeb glanced up, spotting the world tortoise obscuring the sun in the distance, casting a shadow over the entire forest. The sunlight cast a red glow around the creature's shell, which played host to its own forest, where the parasites lived. Stab, stab. Jeb thought, closing one eye to remove his depth perception and pretending to stab the boss monster. 2 days, 23 hours remaining.
Jessica got back with the items that night, tossing him the cane that was seemingly made of one solid piece of ivory. Vivicant cane, consumable item. Carried as a supplementary item by the vaunted healers of Mesticos, these canes allow the master healers to handle emergencies when circumstances would otherwise prevent them from being able to help, maintaining their prided success rate even in the most adverse conditions, along with their priceless prestige. Channel Mist threw this valuable cane to heal wounds and remove fatigue in an area of effect. Effect is proportional to mist spent. 4 of 4 uses remaining. Nice, Jeb thought, setting it down beside him, his mental evaluation of Jessica going up a notch. She came back despite having a map in her head, rather than leaving him to his own devices, or selling the information to another group and disappearing entirely. They set up a warning system around the edge of the safe zone and went to sleep. 2 days, 16 hours remaining. Right around dawn, the alarm went off. It was just a simple wind chime of throwing knives connected to a string, but it did the job. Tinkle, tinkle, clang! The string broke, dropping the wind chime to the ground, accompanied by cursing. Jeb leapt out of his bedroll, put his back against the tree, and had a spear raised before his eyes could even focus on what he was seeing.
Good morning!
A man's voice came from the woods. It wasn't booming and growly like Redbeard's. Rather, it was reedy and a bit nasal. Jeb blinked again and spotted 5 humans dressed for battle standing just at the edge of the safe zone.
Careful of the...
Jeb cleared the sleep out of his throat and spoke up. Careful of the pit traps.
Yeah, we spotted those on the way in,
the leader said, taking the sword off his belt and dropping it by the edge before approaching.
It's a good idea, but a little work intensive, don't you think?
Pint of sweat saves a gallon of blood, Jeb muttered, glancing around to take in his situation. The first thing he noticed? The 4 teammates of the fellow were obvious zombies. They walked with lurching steps, clutching swords and axes in each hand and covered in battle damage and grievous wounds. 3 men and 1 woman.
Hi,
the man said, pointing to himself.
I'm Ron.
Ron was a ginger, maybe 10 years younger than Jeb, wearing a skull as a codpiece. He was wearing normal armor underneath. His face was somewhat emaciated from lack of food, but he seemed pretty chipper, all things considered.
This is Susie. She tried to kill me.
He pointed at the lady zombie, a blonde-haired woman in her 40s. Half of her skull seemed to have been bashed in with a rock.
This is Buck. He was the leader of the group. He tried to stop Susie, but she stabbed him.
Buck appeared to be the best kept out of the 4 of them, save a big bloody spot right around his liver.
And this is Phil and Eric,
he said, pointing to the last 2.
They tried to rob me.
What about that guy? Jeb asked, pointing his spear at the necromancer's crotch.
This guy?
He asked, pointing at the skull over his junk.
I found this guy.
I'm assuming you're telling me all this to prove you won't attack me without provocation? Ron snapped his fingers.
This guy gets it. I'm actually pretty freaking hungry, and I was hoping... Holy shit!
His eyes had wandered over to the mass grave of Kruskers. It's a bit gamey, but as long as you keep your friends parked just inside the safe zone, I don't see why you can't help yourself, Jeb said, levering himself to his feet. Foot with his spear. Ron hadn't shown any hostility yet, so there was no reason to be standoffish and turn a potential friend into an enemy. Jeb wasn't inviting him home for dinner. He was extending a tiny bit of trust.
Fair enough,
Ron said, motioning with his hand. Jeb saw a line of neon purple power flare into existence between Ron and his zombies for an instant before it faded away again. In addition to hundreds of other lines extending in every direction totally surrounding the safe zone. Jeb's eye twitched. Did he slaughter humans or did he zombify monsters and hold them back so as not to alarm me? Well, consider me alarmed. Jessica was nowhere to be seen, so Jeb could only assume she'd woken up faster than him and had immediately gotten out of sight. The 4 shamblers plopped onto their butts just inside the safety of the circle, but still far away from Jeb while Ron walked forward, aiming for the topmost crusker on the pile. Ron pulled out a knife and tried to jam it through the creature's thick hide, obviously having extreme difficulty due to his thin arms.
"Couldn't you just zombify the thing and make it carry its meat over here?" Jeb asked, pointing at the crusker.
"Huh? Oh, no. As soon as I bring something back from the dead, its flesh becomes poisonous. Learned that the hard way," Ron said, chuckling between grunts as he tried and failed to saw off a rib.
"Here, stand back. I'll help,"
Jeb said, stabilizing himself with his spear as he held a hand out. "I'm pretty sure I can target part of an object," he thought. He'd made a wall out of air. He wasn't forced to target all the air in the atmosphere. Where did one object end and another begin? Was the edge of a discrete object determined by density, structural integrity, or perhaps it was just intent? Orange mist shot out of Jeb's hand and caught the creature's middle rib. With a mental yank, the popping of bone, and a meaty tearing sound, the rib and surrounding tissue tore itself free before floating over to the fire.
"Oh, thanks,
Ron said, suddenly looking a little more nervous than before. He probably thought he could outrun the cripple or swarm him if necessary. Now that he knew Jeb could potentially tear his head off from 100 feet away, he realized that mutually assured destruction was possible.
"Wizard Master Race, am I right?" Ron said with a half-hearted fist bump.
"It seemed like the best choice at the time," Jeb said. "Now come on, sit down and eat some Krusker with me. I didn't tear your head off when you first showed up. You didn't sick your hundreds of zombies on me at first sight. I think we've established a certain basic level of trust."
Ron chuckled.
"You saw the strings.